Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Asia Business First podcast. I'm Adam Bhaktia.
And I'm Julie Yu.
And Julie, today we are going to talk about the fangs.
That's right.
Right? A lot to talk about this week. It was a huge week for earnings and also one company in particular, Apple, becoming the first publicly traded company to reach a market cap value of $1 trillion US dollars. Wow. Can you imagine? That is staggering, that amount. Mm-hmm. And that happened on Thursday, and the stock rallied to over $207 per share, and that brought Apple to that $1 trillion mark. Now, this follows, of course, another stellar report card from the Cupertino giant. And the interesting thing is, you know, the phones are so expensive, and they didn't sell as many, but the market didn't worry too much about how many phones moved off the shelves because the price tag increased their margins. And the other thing is, of course, the services revenue, you know, from Apple Cloud, Apple Music, and all of this stuff. So all in all, you know, investors were so happy that I bought the stock and pushed it to that $1 trillion valuation mark, a real milestone, I think.
It was certainly a different story for other tech stocks. I mean, they didn't do so good. The broader FANG index of technology company is down almost 10% from its June high. FANG, of course, stands for the high-performing tech stocks such as Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, and Alphabet, which was formerly known as Google. But Apple is, of course, included as another A in FANG. I think CNBC's Jim Cramer came up with that term. Yeah. But anyways, last Thursday, Facebook may have gotten an F from investors after its massive sell-off last Thursday. It lost about $119 billion in stock market value after the poor second quarter report, and company has missed revenue and active user projections in the wake of the data leaks and fake news scandal, and has been a little sign of recovery since.
Yeah, it hasn't really rebounded all that much. A little bit, but, you know, wiped out huge amount of market cap. It wasn't the only social media company, though, that suffered the similar fate, and it was Twitter that saw the same fate. Its shares lost more than a quarter of their value over 2 days on concerns also about user growth. And this had a knock-on effect across Amazon and Alphabet, whose shares fell slightly on Tuesday, although they've since rebounded a little bit. Netflix also slumped earlier in the week because of a disappointing quarterly report in terms of, you know, number of people who are signing up to the subscription service. Now, there are fears that the company's expansion is slowing after its subscriber growth fell short of expectations. And that was just like, you know, big warning sign to investors out there. So are the best days of the tech sector over? Well, to discuss this, we are pleased to be joined once again by Christopher Brankin, who's the CEO of TD Ameritrade Asia. Chris?
Hey, Chris.
Hi. Good seeing you both today.
You too.
So, Chris, let's start with Apple, you know, which has now become the first public company worth $1 trillion. Were you impressed?
Look, it's a huge number. I mean, no way not to be impressed by that overall number. But I think, you know, more of what I'm focusing on is what Tim Cook and co. are kind of have in the pipeline. You know, and they're excited about what they have in terms of services, in terms of products that, you know, they have coming out. Now, we don't know exactly what a lot of those are, but they usually make these announcements around the fall. Now, normally a slow quarter for telephone sales. We did see, you know, kind of slightly miss the number on the overall sales, like Adam was saying a minute ago. But the price point of these phones were incredibly high. And I think that goes back to, like, you know, the ecosystem of Apple. Like, once you're kind of in that, you are an Apple-lite, as I like to call it, and it's where you line up and wait to buy the next product and service that they have. You know, like, everyone doesn't just know one person like this. You know multiple people like this in your own life that will wait for the next newest Apple product to come out, and they don't care what it is, they're going to buy it.
It's interesting because, I mean, when you look at the changes to their iPhones and even to a certain extent their iPads, they're so incremental, and yet you see this craze. It's unbelievable. Even here in Singapore, at the Apple store, when they released both their new phones, you know, people were queuing up to rush to buy these phones, but really there's not a big change from one model to the next, is there?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, Samsung, Huawei, Xiaomi, like all these other phone giants don't have this cachet, you know, so how does Apple keep people, you know, driving forward with this? You know, it's part of their overall ecosystem. You know, once they kind of get you into this, it is something that basically it's hard to get out of. And you saw this from their numbers. You saw their services almost made up 17% of their revenue, which is a huge number. So you take their iPhones and their services, that's 71% of their overall revenue from Apple stock is based off just those two things.
So, Chris, could this good fortune continue, or would the tech giant hit this mark and, you know, fall back down?
Sure. Look, I think looking at the FANGs, I think you got to start to look at them a little bit differently in terms of where they're getting their valuations from, and is it based on subscriber growth? Do they have other income streams that they can actually push their stock forward? From a valuation standpoint, look, Apple hit that $1 trillion market cap valuation. That's a huge number. But look at it from a trailing PE. Look at it from actually where the valuation of the stock is. Like, I think we still have room to go higher, which is hard to, you know, it's hard to kind of say, because people ask me about this all the time. When are we going to start seeing some sell-off on some of these giant tech stocks? Are we going to start to see some rotation into some other sectors? Yes and no. Like, Apple, I think, is still going to be an area of relative strength. And you touched on a minute ago about Facebook. Now, Facebook has already made an announcement that they're going to try and diversify some of their income streams by activating WhatsApp. You know, look, they have 1.5 billion users. It's essentially free.
Well, they haven't monetized that at all.
Correct. You know, so they're all, I think, you know, they paid $22 billion for WhatsApp 2 years ago. Yeah. At some point here in the near future, which it looks like they're going to try and first go down the business route, whether it is advertising or trying to charge some type of fee subscription to businesses that use WhatsApp as one of their main communication devices. Because look, there's a lot of potential. There's a lot of kind of room just by the sheer number of clients that they have, and Apple has it. Facebook has it. The companies that might have a little bit room to pause, or as an investor to pause, is, you know, Twitter, is Netflix. Because look, when their subscribers are down, it's very difficult for them to kind of have their valuation, you know, be, you know, accountable for.
Well, in a way, right, when that's all that the rally was hinged on was this user growth, subscriber growth, it's almost akin to a one-trick pony. And there's my next question, is that, do you find it interesting that, you know, in today's market rally, in the US at least, when you look at the techs, I mean, I know you can't paint the same brush across all of them, but, you know, why do you think it is that investors are comfortable to price this premium on internet services companies? Then you've got an Apple, right, which is kind of both internet services and also hardware with more reliable earnings. But yet there's such a wide gap in the valuations. And I'm not talking market cap, but I'm talking forward or trailing PEs.
Yes. You know, a lot of it, you know, is potential. We talk about real earnings and potential earnings. At some point, investors, you know, want to see, you know, not just potential earnings. And I think we saw some kind of early signs of that in terms of, especially around Netflix and around Twitter, because they're more of a one-trick pony rather than Facebook's and the Apples of the world, because they have multiple streams of income they could potentially unlock. As we're Twitter, look, there's a lot of competition with Twitter and Netflix in terms of their space. Streaming media has new competitors every day. You know, whether, you know, we see Twitter trying to monetize some of their, you know, their profits by working with the NFL, working with Bloomberg Media, trying to get some types of additional streams that they don't have. Netflix, we have lots of competition. We have Hulu, Google, YouTube, every stream out there. You know, so you have, are there other areas that they can monetize? You know, investors are looking at the Netflix, Twitter separately, I think, from the Apples and the Amazons. Facebook is the one area they have potential to come off the mat. You know, they've been knocked down. They lost more valuation. This was a good number. I like this. They lost more valuation than McDonald's Corporation on their earnings miss. So McDonald's, which is arguably, if you take all their employees plus their franchisees, they have 1.1 million employees worldwide. The whole market cap of that company went away on an earnings miss by Facebook, which is crazy.
I'm going to go back to Apple and ask, what do you think is next for Apple, in the considering that, you know, rivals like Huawei and Xiaomi are offering higher specification, you know, devices for lower prices?
Well, like, that's the thing. It's like, where is the tipping point in terms of, if I can get a phone from Huawei, from Samsung, from Xiaomi, like, for, let's say I sign up a contract and I get a phone for free or a nominal amount of money, let's call it $100, why am I going to continue to spend more and more money on Apple? You know, like, how do they get the new people? I think the people that are in their ecosystem, they're in there. But as we kind of go into this next generation of phone buyers, look, is a $3,000 phone 5 years down the road? I mean, is a phone going to cost more than your laptop? You know, I mean, if you look at the projections just over the last 3 years in terms of how the pricing has gone, we're definitely on that path. But at some point, for me as an individual, for me as an investor, there's got to be some room to pause. But I don't see that here in the near term because our investors at TD Ameritrade here in Singapore, look, they are net new buyers of Apple month over month. When we see a dip, they take it as an opportunity to buy more. You know, so it is top of mind. They are fully kind of looking for Apple to continue to grow, and they're excited about going into the latter half of the year is generally an area of strength for Apple. They have new releases. They have all their, you know, their big, you know, events that they have in the U.S., and I think it's, you know, a lot of positivity, you know, that Tim Cook and his team has built into the remainder of 2018.
Yeah, don't forget there's Black Friday, holiday sales, Christmas sales. Everybody seems to have an Apple product in their Christmas stockings, right, at the end of the year that pushes sales. But you mentioned a good point in terms of price point. Do you think that, I mean, they've banked on this iPhone for the last decade to drive earnings, let's face it. And before, a number of analysts were so critical of Apple because they didn't have a breakout product for how many years after the iPad? I mean, at some point, do you think that they'll reach that tipping point, that there is going to be a line in the sand for consumers and how much they're willing to pay for their hottest selling product, the iPhone, if they don't reintroduce a breakthrough product that could help potentially push earnings?
Well, I mean, I think if you look at it from the iOS versus Android, all the competitors are across Android. So are the Huawei's and Samsung's and Xiaomi's and others kind of fighting each other a bit in terms of overall valuation for their products? Then you go to iOS, which is Apple, fully separate, distinct, has separate operating system. It works a little bit different. You know, it's a little bit different nuances. You know, so at some point, valuation matters to the end consumer, but it doesn't seem to matter at this point. I mean, $1,000 for an iPhone and people line up for it.
Let's switch gears and talk about the social media stocks. I mean, we got that scare that you just mentioned with Facebook. Clearly, to some extent, the Cambridge Analytica scandal had an impact on their earnings. I was quite surprised myself to see that the CFO was warning about growth. I don't know, were you? And by the way, I'm just thinking to myself, and the stock dropped like a rock, right? Wiped out $120 billion. But see, we're in this third quarter right now, and is this going to be the make or break quarter for Facebook? You know, if you jump in now to the stock, what are the risks that you could see a further ebbing in daily or average monthly users, right? And what would happen to the stock if that happens? So are we sort of in this void, this dark shadow web for Facebook where you could go either way?
Yeah, look, I think we are in an interesting time. If you were on our trade desk this week, one of the number one asked questions from our customers, how do I buy Facebook? It literally across the board, like they've seen this price drop. We saw this a few months ago when the Cambridge Analytica came out and this Facebook dropped down to about $158. Last time we spoke, you know, went from 158 back up above 200. Now we saw this, you know, kind of pullback. Is this an opportunity to buy the stock because they think Facebook will kind of reassess and reorganize, maybe not let their CFO say, well, hey, you know, speak right after earnings in terms of driving their stock price down. Look, yes, there are some overall concerns of saturation in the overall market. There are potential, you know, kind of problems that they may or may not have here in the future. However, I think they have sure scale, sure ability, that just a number of daily average users that Facebook has, they have a lot of potential in terms of what other income streams can they tap. So I would not, I've said this numerous times, you'd have lost a lot of money betting against Facebook over the last 2 years. The people who run that, you know, the whole operation there, they have great products and services. Look, WhatsApp you know, especially across Asia, like everyone uses WhatsApp on a daily basis. Like, how many different WhatsApp groups do you have?
Too many.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think they're looking at ways to monetize, you know, that big company that they bought a couple of years ago. And look, there's huge potential there. So at this point, look, our customers, top of mind in terms of Facebook stock, and they're not looking to sell it. They're looking to ways that they can get long it, whether it's through stocks or whether it's through the option market.
So you think the fears of this widespread tech rax are exaggerated?
I don't know about exaggerated in terms of fear. I mean, fear, I guess, relative to the person you're talking to. But I think Facebook was sold off a little bit too much. Mm-hmm. I mean, in terms of the sheer, it lost over 20% in a night. I don't think, you know, in terms of where their valuations are, where their PE is, where their products are, where their potential is, warranted anywhere near that amount. And I think we've already seen it stabilize. We saw a nice little up night for it last night in terms of where are we headed. So I really think over the next few weeks, like this week was kind of an interesting week in terms of just overall markets in the U.S. and globally, because we had all these central bank meetings and essentially nothing happened, which was expected. They all kind of followed script. So we got past this. We have a jobs number tonight in the U.S., you know, so just kind of give a little overall sentiment to where the U.S. economy is going. I think we look back in a couple of weeks, and this is a blip in Facebook's kind of overall valuations in terms of where they're going to be in 6 months from now.
Right.
And now, granted, it's a big blip.
$120 billion blip. I want to get your perspective on this. Judy talked about, you know, whether it's these moves were over-exaggerated, but in the composition of the market and the proliferation of ETFs and things like that, and people want to get in passive investing, is that in a way exaggerate the moves when we see things like this happen, because people are sort of hungry to get into, say, the tech sector, and they're going to pick up a tech ETF, and you know, when they're getting out of it, then you know, all hell breaks loose on these stocks, because just so much money has flowed into these sort of products. I mean, is that the case? Is the proliferation of ETFs sort of exaggerating the moves in the broader market?
I think a little bit, but ETFs, they're so big and they're growing. I mean, look, even one of our new products that we offer, we have ETFs that now trade 24 hours a day. So we have 12 different ETFs that follow different geographies, different sectors, everything from the S&P 500 to the emerging market space, gold, silver. And, you know, we're soon probably going to offer something. You know, maybe there's going to be an ETF on FANGs. We're going to offer some 24-hour stocks that trade around the clock, whether it's Apple and Facebook and these things. So the amount of money that is flowing in and out of these ETFs does kind of have additional market swings that aren't really kind of why ETFs were created. ETFs are created, less volatility. You have a basket of stocks that follow a broad range of either stocks or indexes or, you know, geographies around the world, interest rates, in order to help smooth out volatility. But the sheer amount of money that's going in and out of these ETFs on a daily and weekly basis can sometimes move the needle more than actually desired in terms of what the products were created for and designed for.
Speaking of volatility, I mean, there are a lot of headwinds in the market, especially this ongoing trade dispute with the U.S. and China. How is this impacting the markets? Do you think this industry will start to feel the effects?
Look, if you look at overall, like, global volatility, markets are pricing in almost no downside risk. You know, trade tariff talks in terms of, you know, whether it's Trump and his administration versus China or Europe or NAFTA, like, they make an announcement. There is a knee-jerk reaction. We saw it last night. You know, so around 5 o'clock Singapore time yesterday, the S&P 500 futures were down about 20 points. And, you know, essentially they finished up 13 on the night. News came out that more tariffs were going to come on. You know, so market takes a quick look at it, knee-jerk reaction, sells off. Then we see the losses paired and either come back to like near unchanged, or we've had a positive day. So we've had this pull back and forth over the last few weeks. I've said this earlier, it's getting a bit exhausting in terms of Trump and his administration team says something, oh, we're going to raise tariffs from 10% to 25% on these $200 billion of products from China. Oh, no, it's going to be $500 billion. No, we're going to tax every Chinese product. I mean, then markets look at it and they discount it to a fact that they don't really think that's what's going to happen. They think not only that cooler heads are going to prevail a bit, but also that reality is going to prevail a little bit. Like, we can't just all of a sudden everyone in the world starts taxing everyone and everything. Like, no one's going to trade anything anymore then. I mean, that's not where we're headed.
Well, it's been highly disruptive, but to your point, is it come up with the bat, you know, Baidu, Alibaba, and Tencent. You know, I was just thinking, right, when you compare to the FANGs, and okay, FANGs had a bit of a disruptive week, right, because of Facebook, Twitter, and Netflix. But when you take a look at the bat stocks, which stand for Baidu, Alibaba, Tencent, I mean, they, well, not so much Alibaba, but, you know, the other two have suffered. Is that about the trade war between China and the U.S. and the U.S. concern about the transfer of technology to China? I mean, why have investors soured across some of these Chinese tech stocks? And that's not limited to bat. In fact, you could widen the net out to quite a number of Chinese tech stocks listed both in the U.S. and also in China.
Look, it's got to be baked in there because, look, Baidu had good numbers, but, you know, their stock price didn't reflect it anywhere near in terms of what we saw, you know, Apple and Amazon. You know, Tencent has been absolutely, just crushed for no reason. I mean, their numbers are great. I mean, in terms of, you know, overall growth and where they're headed and potential. We always talk about potential in a lot of these FANG stocks. Well, the potential price flow is not changing that much for the, you know, these bat stocks, you know, out of China. And look, it's got to be something to do with overall concerns about the tariffs. It's hard to predict, you know, in terms of where we are with some of this stuff. And the hardest thing about it is it's never happened before. And, you know, so we see these moves and these exaggerated moves because we don't know, and the overall investor base globally, look, whether an analyst or a money manager gives his or her opinion on something, that's really what it is, because they're guessing their best guess in terms of where some of these valuations are going or potentially what happens if we do have tariffs that are raised across China, Europe, and the U.S. Now, one area that I like to point out, and I think that we've looked at where we see our investors shifting their focus, is what companies could potentially absorb a tariff and still make money. And a lot of these are the ones that have higher built-in margins or price points for the products and services that they have. Like, just take two things for an example. So we saw on Monday this week, we saw Caterpillar come out with their earnings. Now, Caterpillar, even though they're right in the crosshairs of where the tariffs would be, their products, they have enough room to actually raise their price, and there's still that much demand globally. So they can actually absorb, you know, the higher costs, you know, for their basic materials that they need for the products and services they have. They can withstand it. Now, sure, they will lose. They won't make as much money, but they can raise their prices, so they can kind of keep it at the same path or even on par where they are now. If you go to someone like Whirlpool or these car manufacturers are going to have a tough time because they have smaller margins built into where their profits are. So if you see China raise Tesla's, you know, taxes 25%, well, you know, Elon Musk is not going to be doing business in China.
Well, that's why he wants to build that multi-billion-dollar factory, right?
So
he doesn't get charged at 25%.
Correct. You know, so you, I think you look at it in terms of where we see some focus, you know, our customers in terms of what they're adding to their portfolios is companies that can withstand tariffs if they, in fact, do get increased tariffs. Look, I think we're going to see something. And the companies that have less profit margin built in, so just two, you know, examples would be Caterpillar on the potential good side, Whirlpool on the side where they don't have much room at all.
Okay, parting shots, Chris, before we go. What say you with the FANGs as we move into the next week and beyond? You think things will start to stabilize across the acronym of these top heavyweight techs?
Look, the FANGs definitely still have some bite. It is. But I think you got to look at which ones in terms of who has different potential streams of revenue built into their already their ecosystem they've created. So most popular ones that we see our customers trading and what and have been rewarded have been Amazon, Apple, and the most popularly traded stock of the FANGs has been Facebook. But I think a lot of that is, look, we saw such a huge move. Now are people using this as an opportunity to buy more? So pay a close attention in terms of where Facebook goes, because I think that's going to help with the overall sentiment for some of these larger FANG stocks. Areas of concern, Twitter, like we'd spoke about earlier in terms of...
It's okay, because it's not in FANG, but anyway, but no, go ahead.
Sure. So in terms of, where they're getting their overall revenue growth, are they a one-trick pony? Are there some areas of concerns in terms of, where their valuations and how they're going to be able to do that moving forward? So, I mean, that's, look, I think there are some relative areas of strength in FANG, but there are some areas of concern, and that's to do with, do they have multiple streams of potential income growth?
All right. But we got to leave it there, Chris. Thank you very much for coming in.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Don't be a stranger. Come on again soon. We'll see you on TV anyway. Yeah. That was Christopher Grankin, CEO of TD Ameritrade Asia.
Right. For a comprehensive coverage of business and political news, catch us on Asia Business First, Monday to Friday at 9 a.m. Singapore, Hong Kong time on Channel News Asia. And it's also available under the video on demand section on channelnewsasia.com.
Thanks for listening, folks.
Bye-bye.